When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay. Welcome back to the OHIO podcast, everybody. Your host, Buckeye Boggs. That man over there is the wild man, Chris Wilds. And this is our Rutgers 2024 season preview. Chris, this is a team that if you've been paying any bit of attention at all to anything we've been doing in the past 3 months, we've been hinting at that we think is going to be awfully good and one of our best bets in 2024. And here we are, Chris, ready to talk all about it.
Yeah. This is a team, Eric, that I'm really excited to see play. They have got just the perfect combination of talent, experience, and schedule to really make a go of it this year.
Yeah. I would say underline, highlight, asterisk, schedule. They really lucked out along with Iowa with having, I think, the two easiest schedules in the Big Ten in the 2024 season. So let's go ahead and dive right in tonight, and let's start by talking about last season for Rutgers and a little bit about their history. Of course, last season they started off really well with a win over Northwestern, who ended up being a pretty good football team. They beat Temple. They went then in their non-conference, they beat Virginia Tech from the ACC in a big Power 5 win. They went on the road and lost to the Cheaters up north 31-7, came back home and just crushed Wagner, went back on the road again, lost again in a closer game, this one in Madison, Wisconsin, before coming back home and beating Michigan State, going on the road and beating Indiana before they got their bye. That set them up at 5-2 after the first seven games. And then they went on a rough stretch. 6 wins and 2 losses. So 6-2. Then the next 4 to finish off the season were all L's, and it all started with a game at home against Ohio State in which they were winning and were driving down the field to go ahead even more, to put more points on the board, when a pick 6 happened, and the second half they were just unable to bounce back from that pick 6. That could have really changed everything about their season. Now, they still ended up going 6-6, but losing their last 4, Ohio State, Iowa, Penn State, Maryland. Then they really showed their resiliency and what I think a lot of people are hanging their hat on in 2024 when they, in their bowl game, defeated the U 31-24. Vegas said they were a 4.5 win team last year in 2023. I said they'll go get to 5-7. Chris, you nailed it. You said they get to 6-6. That was the smart money. They were the over last year. You won money on Rutgers if you took the over. 7-6 overall, 3-6 in the Big Ten. Greg Schiano now has a record of 87-95 at Rutgers, which is incredible. I mean, that's, even though it's a losing record, it is a really good record when you take into account how much he's had to rebuild twice at that location. They play at SHI Stadium, which is 52,454. They have an all-time record of 669 wins, 685 losses, and 42 ties. They have a winning bowl record of 7-5, and they do have one conference title to their name, and that was not in the Big Ten. So, all that being said, Chris, Rutgers was for the most part throughout the entire tenure time in the Big Ten when they arrived until at least last year, and now moving forward, kind of the laughingstock of the Big Ten. Not so much anymore, Chris.
No, not at all. Tony Schiano once again has got
Greg,
this.
Tony's brother.
Yeah, that guy too.
It's the Schianos. It's you know, you gotta watch out for the Schianos over there on the East Coast, my man.
The Schianos and the Sopranos. Those are the two Yeah, no, Greg Schiano has got this team going in the right direction, man. I think these guys have potential to do really great things this year. Like I said, I thought they did a great job last year. And you know what? I don't care who you are. That four-team stretch that they played at the end of the season was brutal. Especially when you look at Maryland, was probably the softest team in that bunch. And they had, at the time, the guy who was probably the best quarterback in the Big Ten.
They had their best year since Boomer was there.
Yeah. I mean, they were just a good team, and that was just a rough stretch. But like you said, very resilient, did a great job bouncing back, bouncing the U out of their bowl game. And, you know, Shiano walks away with a winning record after the bowl.
We're going to bring on the living legend, Larry Kay, from the Night Watch. My good buddy from over at the College Huddle runs the Rutgers YouTube channel there from the Night Watch. Dude is going to drop some serious knowledge on all of you. You're going to love this interview. Check it out. Hey, welcome back to the OHIO podcast, everybody. As you can see, I'm joined by our special guest, Larry Kay from the Night Watch. He is the voice over at the College Huddle for our Rutgers affiliate. And Larry, welcome to the OHIO podcast. Great to have you this afternoon.
Eric, thanks for having me. You're the man, the myth, the legend. It's beautiful to finally be on with you on your show to talk some Rutgers football. College Huddle is rolling. I'm excited about the season, so it's great to be here.
Yeah, and you know what else is rolling? That's one Greg Schiano over there in Piscataway, New Jersey, my man. He has come back into New Jersey. The most successful coach you guys had in my lifetime anyways. And I doubted he could do what he did before when you guys were in the Big East. And here we sit at the end of August in 2024. And by God, it looks like he's done it again, Larry.
It's crazy. I think he's definitely the most successful coach in my lifetime too. The first stint blew everybody away. But that was in, you know, the old Big East, and that was in a kind of hobbled Big East when a couple teams had left. Miami and VTech had kind of hit the road already. So to have him come back and to see Rutgers, you know, on the cusp of what we think they could be doing, at least internally with the program being where they are, is incredible to see. It's encouraging for us Rutgers fans. He's always been a Jersey guy and a Rutgers dude to us. So to have him home and to be finishing the job he started or trying, it's fun.
Let's start right there, being a Jersey guy. It seems like he understands the pulse of that program and that university and that community more than anybody I've ever seen before. And in doing so, he's tapped into something when it comes to recruiting and development and just the excitement around the program. What is it about Schiano that he gets that so many before him have failed?
I think there's a very, as you kind of alluded to there, there's a very unique culture with New Jersey and then on a second level with Rutgers and the sports. New Jersey culture is already, you know, really spread out amongst professional sports teams and interests. You're in the middle of two major cities, Philadelphia and New York. New Jersey, we take pride in our major cities, you know, Newark and Jersey City, Asbury Park, Atlantic City, to an extent, but there's a lot of, you know, aversion, you know, more of a allegiance to New York or to Philadelphia, and it kind of leads to a scattered cultural element in New Jersey. You also have Rutgers itself, which is named for somebody who donated money to found the university. It's the State University of New Jersey. But the name and the fact that a lot of people go to other, you know, smaller schools or Ivy Leagues or go out of state, it kind of leaves this void in New Jersey in terms of getting support for Rutgers, whether that be booster support, financial support, fan support. That's a very unique place to be when you're trying to be taken seriously as a major sports school. You know, and there's schools like Ohio State and Michigan. These schools, the state kind of rallies around them. It's known who they are. They've had success. Rutgers hasn't had that level of national success in major athletics. And so that's one element of it, is trying to understand, how do I galvanize the entire state from all the way in deep South Jersey? As small as Jersey is, it's such a diverse array of cultures, mountains all the way in the west, cities to the east, beaches, you know, and within an hour commute, it's so diverse. And I know Ohio's, you know, very diverse because I've traveled Ohio, but it's much bigger. So it's weird that it's this unique, dense little ball of different cultures. And to get things done here, There's a certain mentality. There's a certain personality. There's a certain way that you have to innately understand how to deal with the bureaucracy, how to deal with the pushback, how to deal with the doubters, how to tap into the pro-Jersey sentiment that'll get people to galvanize behind you, and how to take their attention, you know, off of the major sports and, I mean, pro sports and things, and focus on Rutgers. And Schiano has that unique ability from just being here his whole life. I think where he knows what makes New Jersey people tick. He knows how to go into that bureaucracy. And I actually think, Eric, his first stint, you know, involved a lot of maneuvering around a bureaucratic system at the university that wasn't necessarily used to or thrilled about entering major college athletics. Whereas now, I think after we get the invitation to the Big Ten, we go to the Big Ten, we have some success through him with branding and on the field, and then the basketball program and some other programs, and we've had success in women's soccer and things, but those drive the bus. Now the university, from the presidential level, organizationally, annexing medical schools that used to be part of other New Jersey entities, now all under the Rutgers umbrella, you know, annexing different campuses and things and getting on the same page, it's easier for him now. But he had to navigate that and somewhat make that happen. And there's just a very unique Jersey personality that you need. I think I have it, but he definitely has it. And I think it works for him well, and it's necessary.
I think one of the things that he has this year that reminds me so much of when he was there the first time is he had a dynamic player. And I think he's got one again this year. We're going to talk about him shortly. But what are some of the other storylines that I might not be aware of going into the season surrounding the program?
Well, first of all, I think there was big news just today. Mo Torre, one of our captains, our seniors, one of our best linebackers, is out for the year. Torn ACL, really rough news for us. I think what maybe I wouldn't have referenced necessarily as a predominant storyline now becomes one. It's an unfortunate one, but it's the health of the linebacker core. Tyreen Powell, who is a very talented, multifaceted player, suffered an injury the end of last year. I believe it was against Ohio State, actually. And he's a dynamic player who can really get out in space and close off angles quite well. He can also look for the ball in the air. He does a lot of things. So him going out hurt us kind of towards the end of the season last year. He suffered another major injury early in 2024. He's slated to be back for the season. The speculation has been that he'll be back for the beginning of the season. Considering we have Howard, Akron, and then a bye before on the road against VTech, I actually think we won't see him until a couple games in. But now you have this Torrey injury. So the depth of the team, I think, with that microcosm, but also in general, Schiano likes to say we're a developmental program. We want to get a pipeline full where we have upperclassmen starting and we have depth behind them ready to step up and then ready to take on that role as seasons progress. Rutgers has done well at retaining their players. So I think the story, you know, with the linebacking core is a microcosm given the injuries, but overall will be the depth of this team. Have we finally reached a point in this pipeline that Schiano describes it as, where we can absorb some injuries, we can absorb some guys needing to rotate to stay fresh, where we can absorb, you know, guys needing a week off or et cetera, and we can really use that to our advantage as we go through a grueling Big Ten schedule? I think this is the first year we have a really deep wide receiver room. We have a considerably deep running back room. We have a considerably deep, you know, defensive side of the ball. And it's going to be tested. And already before the season even starts, it's tested. I was looking at it more optimistically. Like, look at all the guys we can rotate just to keep them fresh. It's going to be tested like it is in any football season. War of attrition. You get that news today. Who's ready to step up? I got a name for you. But I think it's going to be a big story.
Okay. While you were giving me that explanation, I went back and looked because I thought, my gosh, I thought we had him pretty high. We had him ranked in our player rankings as the third best linebacker in the Big Ten.
See?
That's it. Yeah, he was first team all Big Ten defense for us here at the OHIO podcast when we did our rankings. And yeah, so let's dive into the roster a little bit. That's good. That's a big loss. That's a huge loss. How are you going to replace him? And what are some of the other key roster moves that have been made this offseason to get you guys in place to be successful, especially, and don't, you know, feel free to mention guys who are coming back that need to be talked about as well.
I think that is another huge story, and it goes to that depth point I made. A lot of guys who might have and could have moved on decided to come back. You know, it obviously starts with the big name Kyle Manungai, you know, who was and I thought this when he was coming out of school a little bit in his freshman year, because you could kind of see the glimpse of the style of runner he was. But he's just the type of guy who gets better as the game goes on, you know, likes to carry guys on his back, likes to make holes where there are no holes, you know. But him coming back, a guy in the secondary like Flip Dixon coming back, you know, just this myriad of players who chose to return, I think is a huge story. But I think one of the biggest and most impactful roster moves that is going to impact the season this year is the quarterback change. You go from Gavin Wimsett to Ethan Kaliakmanis. Wimsett came in with a ton of fanfare, a highly rated recruit out of Kentucky. I loved his physical abilities and skill set, but what wasn't coming to fruition and quick enough, I think, for Rutgers. And I think Rutgers maybe got a little bit ahead of schedule. I don't know if Coach Yana would take issue with me on that, but from most analytical standpoints, we weren't quite sure they would be where they were last year. It was almost a surprise, the early success they had. And I think Rutgers looked at their situation and said, we've got guys running open.
Yeah, I want to make a statement about that really fast. Two things. Number one, you had Ohio State on the ropes. Okay, let's be honest.
Which is crazy.
And number two, I've been telling people, I think Rutgers was a quarterback away last year of really taking that next step. And so that move, I said, look, if they had a quarterback who could throw the football, they beat Ohio State last year.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's a huge point, and I was defensive of Wimsett at the time, and I said, oh, come on, there's other problems with the roster and with the team and et cetera. But if you really look back at it and you look at the playmakers, and if you kind of superimpose that onto this year, which is completely doable because all the players are pretty much back plus some, you have a bunch of skill players, whether that's in the backfield who can come out in space and get the ball, whether that's players in the backfield benefiting from the defense having to watch for the perimeter, or whether it's just the myriad of guys we have on the perimeter. You have Nassim Brantley, who wasn't cleared to play by the NCAA last year. He was supposed to be one of the leading wideouts last year. He didn't get to play. Now he's like a new addition because he's cleared now. He's playing. Dymir Miller, who's transferred up from Monmouth, who was a leading receiver at that level, who has looked excellent in camp. A guy like Chris Long, who was injured, a kid like Ian Strong, who was a freshman and making an impact last year, and other players like Christian Dremel, who's a returning leading receiver for the team. You have all these players, and Ethan Kaliakmanis does not have to be a world beater. He does not have to be a gunslinger. What he has to do is simply make the majority of high efficiency passes and high, you know, percentage passes in the flat, over the middle, you know, maybe a little bit on the perimeter, just to get the ball in the hands of these playmakers. And I thought it was interesting that we had a spring camp competition between the quarterbacks that everybody, and I'd say many, expected to go well into the summer. And at the conclusion of spring practice, Shiano sat down with Gavin, and Gavin transferred out. So to me, that means that the competition was so decisive in Kaliakmanis' favor that there was no need to continue. Now, I don't think that's an indictment on Wimsett, because by all accounts, he has continually progressed. I think it bodes well for Kaliakmanis that despite Wimsett continuing to make some strides, now, no one's saying Wimsett was the most accurate quarterback because he was like one of the least, and that's not to diss him, but I don't think it was totally because Wimsett was so below par. I think Kaliakmanis came in and played well enough in the spring to make a decisive decision for the coaching staff. And I think that's going to change how this offense can produce immensely. And just like you said, last year could have been a vastly different season had we had a quarterback. This year we have that quarterback. We have even more playmakers on that side of the ball. And a lot of returning, now not the whole line, but the whole left side of the line is pretty solidified. I think that's absolutely huge. And not to take away from anybody else who came in or is returning, that quarterback position, it's the most important position in the game, even in college, even though college is a little bit more room for error than the pros. And I just think it's going to make a big difference in what you see from Rutgers.
Before I ask you the strength and weakness question that I like to ask everybody, let's talk a little bit about your stud, man. So I've been, again, this guy put the fear of God in me last year. And of course, I'm talking about Manungai.
Mm-hmm.
I've been saying this. If you would have taken the jerseys off the guys and you would have just shown the season that he had last year versus Braylon Edwards, there's no way in the world EA Sports should have put him on the cover. Like, it's okay. So this guy is an absolute monster. He is a monster. I think he has a chance of being the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year this year. And that sounds sacrilegious as a Buckeye when you've got Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins in the backfield. But here's the thing. I think they split carries this season. I think their numbers aren't going to be as nearly as impressive as Manungai's are going to be, because I think the dude is literally saying, I'm not a bus, I'm a freight train, I will carry all of you.
I think you're right. I think it was interesting when he was coming out of high school, Don Bosco prep, and he's coming out with another Essex County kid, and that Bosco recruits, you know, around the state. So, you know, Jalen Berger was a newer kid, and Manungai was from out in Roseland, same county where I am. And there was a lot of talk, you know, certain guys on the inside of that kind of region of New Jersey's high school football world were like, you know, watch out for Manungai. You know, I think maybe we wanted Berger. Berger goes to Wisconsin. He's now at Michigan State. And there was a lot of talk, like, you know, I think Manungai might be the better of the two backs. He runs decisively. He's not, you know, a tweener. So you're not looking at this necessarily the way the star, you know, rankings programs rated him. Berger's got this playability, big playability, but he's kind of maybe a tweener. And look at Manungai. He's a decisive, downhill-type runner. He runs with a purpose. He might be the better running back. Just watch, you know, stay tuned. And his freshman year, you could see glimpses of it. I mean, he started to run with that style, and it reminded me of a couple guys we had, Jawan Jamison, obviously Ray Rice. And I'm not comparing him. I'm just saying that style of decisive running, carrying guys, you saw glimpses of it. His sophomore year, Sam Brown from Philly comes in, four-star, highly rated, and he kind of explodes onto the scene and is playing well, and you kind of lose sight of Kyle, but Kyle continues to develop, and that's what Shiano wants to do, develop guys to their true potential. And last year, you see Manungai just emerge onto the scene, and he kind of emerged onto the scene the way he runs, which is a gradual buildup of gaining rhythm and pushing his way yard by yard across that line. It wasn't like, oh, we had one game where we're like, where'd he come from? We saw it, and it was gradual. But that type of running back, the way Greg Schiano coaches, and Greg has evolved in a lot of ways with the game, and we've all seen the game evolve. But still, he likes a ball control team. He likes to control the clock as best he can. And I even like it as an old school football fan. I like to line up helmet on helmet if we can run that ball. And if it's 2 yards or less, on third down, you are very confident with two downs to go, you're going to convert. And that's what football is still. It's a game of marching down the field and getting those first downs. Kyle Manungai fits precisely well into what Greg Schiano wants to do, into what Rutgers wants to be, into this league and conference in the Big Ten and what they have traditionally been, which we have been searching to try to be able to do since we've come into the league. And, you know, he's a leader. He's got a huge heart. And I think there could be something this year where you have players like Benjamin, you have Sam Brown. Maybe they're splitting the load a little bit more because Kyle, they want to keep him fresh. However, I don't think it's like Ohio State where it's going to be that much of a split. So I think you will see some numbers. He will be carrying the team in a lot of ways. And I think with Kalik Manis able to distribute, that doesn't mean Manungai's not going to do what he does. That just means he might have more openings, and that just means that we've got a little bit more to fall back on once we set the defense up to expect Kyle, and Kyle pummels a little bit in there. So I agree. I think it was a revelation. I think it sets us up well. The fact he returned, I think a lot of people thought, hey, he's going to maximize on his season. He's going to be gone, see if he can get like a mid-round draft pick or something and go. And this is a guy who bleeds scarlet. This is a guy who bleeds jersey, and he's coming back for his teammates. And I'm very excited to see what's going on.
Yeah, you should be. I just looked up his 247 sports from back in 2020, and he was the 160th ranked running back.
Yes. Think about that.
That means there were some idiots who ranked 159 yes. other guys ahead of him.
Think about that. Think about that, okay? It just shows that Schiano says, and I think some people say it, and it's a little bit of coach speak, and I think we all kind of know that there is some level. Of course you want the highest rated players. Of course you want the guys that everybody wants. At the same time, I think he truly means when he says, we go after cultural fits. We go after guys who we have a vision for, that when we develop them, they will fit into our philosophy and our four-year, three-year, two-year plan, whatever it is. And this is an example of that. They went out, they got them, they were content with them. Look what happened, you know.
Yeah, yeah, A plus on that one, man. Very jealous of that guy. That guy's going to be, Lord help us, he ends up going to the New York Jets, or in your case, the Miami Dolphins.
Yes, yes, they. So you know, yes,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, I would gladly take him on the Cincinnati Bengals, but I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
And I don't want to digress either, but the Bengals, man, I've been to a game, believe it or not, the Thursday night Miami Bengals, and I just want to say Cincinnati, awesome place.
It is
Cincinnati
cool.
Bengals crowd, loud, awesome crowd. So just, I got a lot of love for South Ohio after going there, man.
Yeah, Cincinnati's a fun, and as they say in Cincinnati, they're state all to their own. They yes. don't want Ohio to yes. claim them, or Kentucky or Indiana. They think they're the state of Cincinnati. Us Bengal fans up here in Columbus, we're kind of like, oh, come on, guys.
Gotcha. Yes, yes.
It's a fun dichotomy, nonetheless. Mm-hmm. Let's digress a little bit, and I'm gonna ask you to take off your scarlet glasses,
mm-hmm.
and mine are scarlet and gray. Yours are scarlet completely, but yes. Take those off for just a minute, Larry, and tell me the truth here. What is the strength of this football team beyond the running back situation? What is the weakness of this football team that you're concerned about?
I think that the strength is the secondary. I mean, Greg Schiano is a defensive secondary type coach. You have these returning safeties. You have Flip Dixon. You have Shaquan Loyal, who I think has kind of been not as much. And he's got fanfare, you know, because he's got an interesting life story. And he won us almost single-handedly that Temple game 2 years ago, which would have been a rough thing. I was in Philly for it with a Temple alum. Temple former ball player, actually, is my friend, my best friend, who's a Rutgers fan's father. So I didn't want to lose. But he's returning. He's been a lunch pail guy. 3-year starter, you know, really plays well against the run, lays the hammer when he hits. Flip Dixon, speaks for himself, was excellent for us, a transfer. Him coming back was one of the big additions by not losing somebody. I think at corner, Robert Longerbeam, I know Max Melton left, and he's one of our bigger losses. He went to the league. He was certainly a great special teams player and arguably our best corner. However, I actually would argue that Robert Longerbeam is our best corner and was our best corner last year. And so him returning really strengthens that unit. I think if we can get – we got some pressures last year with our front seven, but I think the sack numbers were lacking. If we can get a little bit more pressure on quarterbacks, I think that secondary is really going to shine. So I think that's a huge strength for the team. I think an underrated strength is that wide receiver core I referenced earlier. I think it's incredibly deep with a lot of dynamic playmakers. Weakness, I think the O-line – now, I'm not saying the entire O-line is weak. I think they exceeded expectations last year. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, as much as Manungai is an absolute beast, and I'm not taking anything away from him, this is football, and you don't rack up, you know, a ton of yards without a decent O-line play. And I think the left side of that O-line, you got Holland Pierce returning. You got the center, Zielinskis, returning. I think he played well. The right side's a little bit more of a question mark. You might have some younger guys trying to step up in there. And the good news, I think, for Rutgers is aside from a few teams, you know, you're not going up against these perennial Big Ten traditional powers this year where your trenches really showed time and time again to struggle. So you may have some ability to make up some of what you've struggled with in the past. But that's a unit where I think Schiano is more confident than he usually is. I only say this, and this is insight to all the other listeners for Ohio State and other Big Ten fans. You know, he usually isn't sure who his starting guys are, you know, at this point in the year. And he hasn't revealed to us necessarily who's starting on the right side, but he has consistently said he knows who his five are. And that, to me, says he's confident in them. So I could be off base. But if I'm looking at the team as a whole, that offensive line is somewhere where, you know, I'm not necessarily looking and marveling at the depth like I am in some other places. And I also will say, you know, not to digress too far into this question, but to give everybody a clear picture here, Ethan Kaliakmanis I'm excited about, and a lot of people are. But he had a pretty decent year his first year over at Minnesota, and then a year that left a lot to be desired last year. And his first year wasn't necessarily some standout year either. So I'm not in any way saying that I'm not excited with the quarterback, you know, upgrade or the change, but I don't know that we've necessarily gone out and solidified, you know, on a national level saying these guys got, you know, a quarterback that everybody else is necessarily envious of. And it's not knocking Kaliakmanis in any way. It's just like, I think he's got to get his passing percentage up above 60% and minimize turnovers for this team to be successful on a consistent basis, especially playing a ball control offense. So it's not a weakness, but it's a question mark. And then linebacker, with these injuries now, you got Powell, you don't know when he's coming back. He might stay nicked up. And now you lose arguably your best linebacker, one of your best linebackers, undoubtedly one of the best linebackers in the country, in the conference, undoubtedly. I mean, this is a player who's probably league bound. You lose him for the year. Now I got to worry about that front seven a little bit, where the line didn't necessarily rack up sacks last year. You have a younger group in the interior, and now you have some question marks with injuries in the linebacking core. I think that's another thing to watch out for.
Yeah. I think, yeah, when you broke that news for me, man, I was like, oh, that's probably going to hurt the middle of that defense.
Oh, yeah.
To come up with the ceiling and floor, let's take a quick glance at the schedule that you guys have. Now, you start off with them, the mighty Bison from Howard, and then you guys get the Zips after we trash them in the first week for you. So
I talked about that on my preview show. You guys getting them.
Poor Akron, man.
Yeah, brutal.
Gosh,
I don't know why they did that.
They're going to be so beat up. Then you get a bye, and then you go on the road for the first time against Virginia Tech. Now, is this an old Big East rival here thing? Like, is there any talk about that at all?
There is. And I think what you get with Rutgers is kind of interesting is, in Rutgers' world, these people are all like big-time rivals, you know, and we have all these memories. And in the world of VTech fans and Miami fans, as it came to the bowl game, it's kind of like, when we were in the Big East with you guys and most of our meetings, I think VTech maybe won, we beat them until last year, you know, prior in history of, they're like, whatever. But I think there certainly is, I think fans of other teams, Miami VTech and those types of teams, more so the teams that were there with us through our successful years in the Big East, like Syracuse, UConn, Pittsburgh. There is like people are cognizant of this old conference rivalry, and they're cognizant of who's in the Big Ten and who's in the ACC and the strength of the respective conferences. And there is some playing for pride and history there. And I think last year when we were able to beat them, you know, at home, and I think when we beat Miami in the bowl game, people are very much aware of Rutgers' kind of last laugh, quote-unquote, redemption, old Big East rivalry. And I think it goes beyond just the conference. I think it's regionally in the country, too. You know, these places are not that far from each other. They're East Coast-type teams. I know Virginia Tech's a little bit more west in the state of Virginia, but it's still on that east side and closer to the Northeast. And I think people are aware of that, and it plays into it. And I think VTech, you know, last year they take a tough loss to us at home. And, yeah, we're the Big Ten, but it's a tough place to play. And I think they have it circled on their calendar to try to get revenge. I think either of us win that game and it becomes kind of a launching pad for the rest of the season. So I expect that to be a tough game. And I expect I predicted we'd get the victory. I like Big Ten teams and their grit and the way they're built. against ACC teams in general. It doesn't guarantee a victory every time, you know, those two conferences are playing, but I just err on that side. However, I'm not naive or overconfident, and if there's any VTech fans listening, I mean, at the end of the day, it's on the road. It's a tough environment. It's our first true test, and we don't really know how things are going to shake out this year for either team, so it's a challenge. I think it could go either way. I predicted a win. I don't think it's fatal if it winds up being a loss on the road, but I think Rutgers really would like to win that and start to gain some momentum, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
I'm looking up what I predicted on this because I already did this, and I don't. Yeah, I got you guys winning this game too.
Right.
Yeah. I just feel like there's a lot of talk about Virginia being back, and I'm like,
right.
You know.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, we heard that from Miami, too, and it was like, Miami's like, the U's like, we're back! And I was like, what's that mean for Rutgers then, guys? And then they don't like me anymore, you know?
No, I get it, and that's, I think, Eric, we're in the same place where I'm not trying to throw shade or diss any other conference or anything, but like, yeah, you could be back, but what does that mean in 2024 with the way everything has changed? And it seems as though when that test occurs time after time, not just with Rutgers, but with other Big Ten teams, and it seems like back is one thing and it's somewhat inconsistent, and then it's, but still, can you go up against these teams that have now like a totally different playing field and a totally different level of competition? You know, I'm predicting a win, but again, wouldn't be shocked if we lost, but I'm predicting a win for the same reasons as you.
Yep. September 28th, you welcome in Washington. They got to come all the way across the country. That's going to be an incredibly interesting game. I think Rutgers gets the win here. And then next is an October 5th away game in what I think is one of your two toughest games. It's at Nebraska. I think Nebraska is trending upwards. I think Nebraska, in a lot of ways, is where you guys were a year ago.
Yes.
And so this is going to be a very interesting game for them because – and I'm sure a lot of Nebraska's mindset for people who aren't like engulfed in this world like you and I are, Larry, they think yes. Rutgers, they think old Rutgers, we're Nebraska, and yes. They think old Nebraska. It's like, no.
They no. do, yes.
It's not like that, guys. Like, this is a real football team, man. I still think that environment – with all the momentum that they've got, this is going to be a very good game for both football teams. I'm incredibly interested in that football game. In fact, if I wasn't married to Ohio State every single Saturday, I might literally make that trip because I just think that game is going to be incredible. Your toughest home game is right after that, and that's brutal to me. Washington, Nebraska, Wisconsin, back-to-back-to-back. I think – probably somewhere in there, Rutgers might take an L. But the good news is you do get whiskey at home.
Yes.
And so that helps. Then you get the poor UCLA Bruins, which, Larry, I don't know if you've looked at their travel schedule this year. Nobody in college football travels as much as UCLA. They start their season on the road in Hawaii.
Oh, that's brutal.
I mean, okay, it's great you get to go to Hawaii, but it's like people think, you know, they look at a map and they think Hawaii is right next to it.
Yes.
It's not, guys.
They think it's like an island off the coast of California. Like, yeah, like, way off the coast.
Yeah, like, you're closer to Japan, boys. Yes. Anyways, they got to do that, okay? Then it's like their poor travel schedule. They're going to be so beat up and tired by then. Yes. I think you guys just absolutely just mark that up as a dub. And then the big one. On the road on a Friday night in Los Angeles. I think the kick time's like 11 p.m. Eastern.
It is.
I'm staying up for it. If Rutgers comes into this game, let's say they've only got one L.
Mm-hmm.
and USC's probably lost a handful of games. This could be loser eliminated from the playoff type of game.
You know, it's interesting because I hadn't even realized the gravity of what you just said until right now, in terms of I was predicting right along with your predictions you just gave, but I didn't even realize or think about the gravity that that would create for that game. Because I think I have Washington as a prediction as a win, just because they lose a lot of players. They're traveling all the way east. I had us dropping one of the two, Nebraska, Wisconsin. I had us dropping to Nebraska and beating Wisconsin, but that can go either way. And then I had us beating UCLA, given the travel stuff, just like you. That's a huge game. I think it could change things a bit if that really is what's at stake, because it gives Rutgers an extra chip on their shoulder. I predicted a loss for us just because going from east to west and 11 p.m. kickoff is tough, and I think they're going to be good. That being said, I talked to somebody who's, you know, a Rutgers guy in SoCal, and he's like, you know, you're overestimating the Pac-12. You're overestimating them. And, you know, if they didn't have this great quarterback and these playmakers, they wouldn't be so good. And watch out for us lining up helmet to helmet and doing something worse. And that would be a huge, happy, you know, revelation for me.
I think USC's closer to Miami.
And that's good insight, because it's possible. You know, we don't really know, Eric, what these West Coast teams, how they're really going to fit in to our, you know, our conference. And
I have a theory, and I've been running this theory. And when I talked to some people who were like in the know, they smiled and they said, you hit the nail on the head. There's two things that are going to affect Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA. Number one is the travel. By the end of the season, jet lag is going to catch up with these guys. So catching these guys at the end of the season is going to be, if you play one of these teams at the end of the season, like Oregon at the beginning of the season versus Oregon at the end of the season, is going to be a completely different animal, which is why my prediction is Ohio State loses in Eugene and beats them in Indianapolis.
I could see it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a different, they're not used to that.
So here's what I did, Larry. You're going to laugh at this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been on the watch out for Rutgers train, I had to find two losses on your schedule.
Yes.
Because I'm like, I can't go 11-1, because if Ohio State loses to Oregon and they're 11-1 and Rutgers is 11-1, it might be Oregon versus Rutgers at Indianapolis and Ohio State gets left out. That'd at 11-1.
It'd be unthinkable like these days.
Right? Yeah. So I'm like, I got to get them two losses. So I'm looking at the schedule, and then, but I was betwixt between the two, because I think you guys go into LA and I think you beat USC. I really do. That's so great. I gave you guys losses to Nebraska and Wisconsin because I had to find two.
That's funny. You know, it's funny, but it's not out of the realm of possibility when you're looking at the makeup of these programs and the way that it shakes out. I was saying on my preview show, we come out of that stretch with Washington and the two of them, and we could be, you know, with one loss, but don't be completely shattered if we have two losses. You know, we're 4-2 at that point. You know, so because it's highly possible. And I said on my show, even if we're 4-2 coming out of that stretch, doesn't mean the season's over or we didn't succeed, because you still have a whole bunch in front of you. It's possible. I had us beating Wisconsin at home, losing to Nebraska on the road, and losing to USC on the road. But I understand where you're coming from on that, and I can definitely see it shaking out that way too. If what I've been told about this USC thing is accurate, which I have no reason to doubt, it's going to be interesting to see this unfold, because one thing I will say about Rutgers this year is this is the first time in a very long time where there's so many games that could go either way at the onset of the season. You know, the margin between being 500 or even a game under 500, which I'm not predicting, but I'm just saying, and being 10-2 is so close, and everything in between is so feasible, because every game can be a close game with a mind of its own and a narrative of its own, you know, that any of these things are feasible and any of these games can go either way. And Rutgers has not been in a position like this for years, but now it's where Rutgers, if they want to get over that hump, they got to go out and execute, and they got to win many more than they lose, because it's all there in front of them. They got to fight through the adversity, the attrition, because it's going to happen in the season. You already take a tough L of a major player today. you got to go out and take it, but it's there for them. And it leads to a lot of optimism, but it's going to be a lot of nail biters and stress during those Saturdays for us, you know?
Yeah. So you get your second bye after the USC game, and then you get Minnesota at home. That's key that that's at home.
Yes.
You're at Maryland. Maryland, I think, is terrible this year. I think they might be one of the worst teams in the Big Ten. You get Illinois at home, and then you're on the road at Michigan State to finish the season. I think Michigan State's going to be better than people think, but I still don't think that they're back. So let's if Rutgers is who I think they are, and they are 6-2, they need to run off those four games at the end of the season. That, to me, is then, okay.
Yes.
You did take the next step. And at 10-2, I think you have a chance to get into the college football playoff, because you might be the third best team record-wise in the Big Ten. Now, here's an interesting thing. Answer this question for me, and then I want you to give me your ceiling and floor after we've gone through the schedule. If Michigan is 9-3 and Rutgers is 10-2, who do you think the college football playoff committee takes between those two?
So Michigan, obviously they got you guys. Just give me the highlights. I mean, do they have Penn
Texas,
State this year?
They have Texas.
Oh, they got
Texas. Oregon, Ohio State, USC. Are there big games? I think they lose three of those.
I think that's a tough call, but I will say this. I think they take Rutgers, and I would say I think they may be looking at, you know, how the teams look, i.e. did Rutgers decisively, like, line up and smash some of these, you know, weaker teams that – and I'm not calling anybody weak, but, you know, some of these teams that we might consider not as strong in the trenches. Did Rutgers really dominate them? Is Rutgers healthy? I think because of Michigan, what transpired kind of last year, and now the coach left, and they're a different team, and the fact that Rutgers would have a better schedule, kind of be on the upswing in that regard, and I know they're supposed to just look at what's on the field and the resume, but I would think with a better record, and looking at the context of the two programs right now, the hype, the everything else going on, you know, I would have to say I think it would be Rutgers. It's not like Rutgers. Yeah, it's arguably, and I mean it is, maybe an easier schedule than Michigan's going to be going up against, but it's not some vastly absurdly easier schedule as if they were from another conference or something. So I think it'd be difficult to leave a team with a better record from the same conference, albeit with different schedules, but some mutual opponents. I don't think you could leave the team with the better record out of the college football playoff.
Yeah, that's my argument as well. You know, now the tinfoil hat wearing guy in me says, yeah, but their athletic director, Ward Manuel, is the head of the CFP this year.
Interesting, too.
I've already set up a great podcast for you there, Larry. Later. No,
but you know what, too? You can't count out, like, I'm not like a huge conspiracy guy, but like, you can't count out the context. That's why I just mentioned Michigan standing with you. That stuff matters as much as they like to say it doesn't, and we don't know the extent it matters, but you got to take all those things into consideration. So,
yeah. So, anyways, that's really cool. All right, what's the ceiling and floor for this team, given the schedule, given the roster, everything we've talked about?
I think if I'm being completely 100% honest, and this is going to almost probably sound to some like a cop-out because it's like, you know, I'm putting all my chips on half the table, you know. But look, in all honesty, the maximum ceiling, I mean, if you just look at the schedule, you look at the opponents, and you don't even do like get to the point where you had to find a second loss. I mean, the ceiling, the true ceiling. And it's I'm not predicting this, so I don't want people to be out there like, this Rutgers guy, Eric, get him off the show. He's a nut. He's too optimistic. He's a clown. No, I'm not predicting this. But the actual ceiling could be 11-1 for this team. I mean,
I don't disagree with you. I thought you were gonna come. I thought you were gonna hit me with a 12-0.
No, come on. Hey, I'm a Dolphins fan, so I know that's. But and we did do it in like the 70s with a weaker schedule. So it is a revered team, like 70 something. We went undefeated. But the floor though, and people are gonna on the other side, the Rutgers fans will be like, dude, you are a pessimist. You're a Debbie Downer. The truth is, we get a bunch of injuries. It doesn't click the way it's supposed to. God forbid we get a catastrophic injury to like a key player, like the quarterback. I don't know. You could be a game. Dare I say it? I want to say 6-6, but the fact is, the majority of these games are toss ups. You could really theoretically have a 5-7 season if you drop it to VTech, and you get on a bad roll, and you know you lose in Nebraska, you come home, and Wisconsin hits you with the trench warfare that they're so known for. That let's face it, I'm not knocking Rutgers in any way, shape, or form, and I guess maybe even I'm sometimes subject to this. Old, you know, tradition dies hard in college football, but I'm not basing it on the fact that the name on the front of the jersey is Nebraska or the name on the front of the jersey is Wisconsin. The cold hard fact, Eric, is that we haven't beaten those teams, and until we beat them, it's not just based on abstract perception of like a traditional power. It's an institutional advantage some of these teams have had in like the trenches and things that we've struggled to get over the hump. You look last year at Iowa. I understand there were certain factors you can point to specific to that game. But a lot of people in Rutgers land thought, hey, we're going to go out to Iowa. Their offense is putrid. Who cares about the defense? We'll find a way to beat them. And it wasn't even close the way Iowa kind of manhandled us. I'm not predicting that Rutgers gets manhandled. I just said our ceiling was 11-1, and I mean it. But I just think that the absolute, you know, breadth of possibilities this season, I'm not kidding when I say literally every single game is, except the first two and a couple other games, I think we beat the Bruins at home. Except for a few games, every game is literally a toss-up. It can go either way. And if you get on a high and you're playing at your best, you could literally lose one game. Yeah. And if you're playing at a low, I think 6-6, but if you're talking absolute ceiling, absolute floor, like I don't think there's any way in heck they're going below 5, and I don't think there's any way in hell they're going undefeated. That's my like absolute ceiling and floor.
Okay. So let me give you, as someone who's not a Rutgers fan, why I think you guys go 10-2. The roster's better.
Mm-hmm.
You addressed issues from last year's team,
mm-hmm.
and you have star power, and you have a solid, consistent coaching staff.
True.
And all of that is more than the majority of your opponents have this season.
You're right. I mean, it can't be argued with. You're right.
The math tells me, watch out for Rutgers. It just does. And maybe yep. I have some PTSD from last year where if we don't get that pick six and you guys marching in, it's probably over.
Yeah.
And we take an L there in Piscataway.
Which
maybe I have some PTSD, but I'm just telling you, the math works out for me, guys. It's going to be a big year for Greg Schiano and the Night Watch podcast. Go check them out. Larry, where can everybody find your show, my man?
Guys, if you look right at my name right here, it says Night Watch, spelled like a Scarlet Night Watch. If you type into YouTube, Larry K. Night Watch, that's my channel. Click subscribe. We've been growing kind of exponentially since I've joined the College Huddle and been collaborating with people. College Huddle's awesome. I'm a member. Click subscribe. Find me at Night Watch. The show is also available widely on almost all podcast platforms. So Spotify, Apple, Amazon now did away with their podcast platforms. But anywhere you normally get your audio podcast, you can get an audio version of my shows and listen to the podcast that way. It's just, again, Night Watch, Larry K, and you'll be able to find it.
And if you have trouble, remember that. Just go over to thecollegeshuttle.com, go to Big Ten, scroll down to Rutgers, and there you go. Find Night Watch right there, and you can find all those links that Larry just talked about. Larry, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Eric, thank you for having me. I hope to join you again soon.
Sounds good. And we want to thank Larry for coming on and taking part in this preview. Go check out his show. Give him a like. Give him a follow, especially if you're a Rutgers fan and you're not following him. You're not doing it right. The man is all over it. I think he's got the very best Rutgers podcast out there.
I guarantee you JR is following him, Eric.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's already been on. JR's already had him on the show. JR, which the joke is JR is a closet Rutgers fan, and I guess he's just pulled us in the closet with him, because this year I am super high on Rutgers. So are you, Chris. Let's take a look at their roster, beginning with the offense first. So we're going to pull over the Our Lads page. And right off the bat, Ethan Calicmanis comes over from Minnesota. He can throw the football. Is he the, like Larry said, is he an upper echelon quarterback? No, but he has a pulse in the passing game, something they didn't have last year, and they went 7-6 without it. So this is a major upgrade for them in the passing game department. Looking at the wide receivers, they bring in Demir Miller as the senior transfer. Brantley's back, Jermel's back. Tight end, you got Kenny Fletcher, he's a junior. And then look at the running back, Kyle Manungai. We've been drooling over him for pretty much the entirety of this podcast already with my interview with Larry. And then, as he pointed out, the left side of this offensive line is good. Pierce, Fetler, and then up the middle, and Gus Zelenskis is good. So they're all upperclassmen. Right side, some question marks. We'll see if they're able to patch that up and at least get that serviceable enough to make some room for Manungai. And I think automatically, Chris, with the addition of Ethan Calicmanis at quarterback, the running game is already going to be better.
Yeah, I mean, because you cannot load up the box anymore like you did last year. You know they've got a guy who can actually air out the ball a little bit. He's not going to be a great quarterback like was said, but you know what? He's a very serviceable quarterback. He's a guy who can go out. He may not win you a lot of games, but he's not going to lose you a lot of games either. So I think this was a great get for Shiano. You know, I think that he and Manungai are going to be a tremendous duo in that backfield, and that, you know, they've got just enough talent, I think, at wide receiver, and just enough talent at the tight end position to actually, you know, move the ball, score some points. This is not a team that's going to score Ohio State or Oregon type numbers. They're just not going to.
Right.
But you know what? They're a team that I think is conceivable of putting up anywhere from 24 to 30, you know, 32 points a game, which if they have any kind of defense, and we know Greg Schiano is a defensive guy, if they play any kind of defense, that's going to be enough to get them some wins in the conference this year.
Indeed. All right, back to Our Lads. Let's take a look at the defense. And, you know, it's funny. We're recording this the day after we interviewed Larry, and Our Lads has already updated the linebacker position by taking out Muhammad Torre, who tore up his knee and is out for the year. He was actually our first team. He was on our first team OHIO podcast preseason first team Big Ten defense, and he's the heart and soul in the middle of this defense for Rutgers, and they're gonna miss him. But the cupboard's not bare. Look on the backside of this defense. Let's begin at the nickel, Desmond Igbinosin. That name should sound familiar to all of you. That is the older brother of our own Igbinosin at Ohio State. So he's got the bloodline. Flip Dixon is phenomenal. I am very high on the free safety, Flip Dixon. The corners are good, and Eric Rogers and Robert Longerbeam. And then, you know, if they can get any pressure up with the front, defensive front, they bring in Malcolm Ray, senior redshirt transfer. They got Hamilton and Lewis, two seniors. And then look at all the linebackers. Even though they're going to miss them, they still got Powell, Walker, Bailey, two of them. And Powell and Bailey, Chris, are seniors. This is a mature, experienced defense. And most importantly, it's a Greg Schiano defense.
Yeah. Like you said, a mature defense is going to be much less likely to make mistakes. They do have some serious star power in that defensive backfield, as you mentioned, especially, like you said, Flip Dixon. I am very high on Flip Dixon.
Yes.
And he also has one of the greatest greatest names in the Big Ten Conference this year.
Great name.
But, yeah, I mean, and Greg Schiano, if this defense makes some errors, it's going to be errors that are made because Greg Schiano becomes overly aggressive. Mm-hmm. We've seen that in the past. He's not afraid to get after it. He's not afraid to throw the kitchen sink at you. And, you know, that may be what he has to do to overcome the loss of Torre. But if it is, he's not going to hesitate to do it. But overall, I think this defense is mature is a good word. I think solid is a good word. It's not loaded down with stars, but it's got one or two guys that can really make an impact.
Oh, remember the interview we had with Ryan Miller? What was the quote? If you're going to make a mistake going full speed.
That's right.
Yeah, so
that's the Schiano philosophy.
Yes. Very much a Schiano kind of way of thinking. It's if you're all going to make mistakes, but let's do it giving maximum effort going full speed. I think this defense is going to be disciplined. I think they're going to be – you're not going to see them make a lot of mistakes. And that's going to be good enough given the additions offensively that they have made. And like I told Larry, and I'm going to reiterate it to you now, Chris, everybody on their schedule is either the same or worse than they were a year ago, except for maybe Virginia Tech, and they have gotten better. The math tells me Rutgers is going to have a good season. So let's take a look at the schedule now and give our predictions and why I am high on taking the over this year with Rutgers. They start off with the automatic win hosting Howard on August 31st. They have Akron after Ohio State beats up on the Zips. Rutgers gets to do the same. Then they get a week three bye. That's the same as Ohio State's before going on the road to take on Virginia Tech. Now, this is a Virginia Tech team who they, back in the old Big East days, got beat up on. Virginia Tech beat them up all the time. However, last year, Rutgers beat them.
Yes.
And Virginia Tech is kind of in the same boat that Rutgers is in right now in the sense that a lot of Hokie fans are looking at this season as a stepping stone season. Well, I kind of feel like Rutgers had that last year already. They might be a year ahead of where the Hokies are at. Advantage Rutgers on the road. I think Schiano can get it done. Then they come right back home to take on what I think is going to be one of the more peskier teams in the Big Ten this year, in the Washington Huskies. Again, if this game's in Seattle, I might feel differently about it. But it's in Piscataway, New Jersey, advantage Rutgers. However, those are two difficult and physical games back-to-back in Virginia Tech and Washington. And now you've got to go on the road all the way to Lincoln to take on a Nebraska team that's trending up. This is a huge game for both teams. And then you come right back home again to take on another physical opponent in Wisconsin. Those four games right there, I think, will make or break the season for Rutgers in Virginia Tech, Washington, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. Can they go 0-4? Yes, they can. Can they go 4-0? They absolutely can. Then they get a home game against UCLA. That'll be a win. And then they go on the road. It'll be on a Friday night. I actually think it's October 25th. They've changed it since we made this schedule. On the road, late. It's 11 p.m. Eastern kick against USC. If Rutgers is still flying high, this will be a huge game for Rutgers. Bye number two to start November, and then they finish the season at home against Minnesota, at Maryland, home against Illinois, at Michigan State. And like I told Larry, if Rutgers has turned the page, they should win all four of those games if they truly are who I think they are going to be in 2024. Vegas says the over-under on this team is 6.5. My prediction, I think they actually go 10-2, 7-2 in the Big Ten, Chris, you are with me. Although we disagree on what those two losses are, we agree on one, we disagree on the other two. JR says 9-3, not quite as good as Chris and Eric, but still very good. 6-3 in the Big Ten. All three of us are saying to you, hammer the over. Rutgers is going to win 7 or more this year.
Yeah, I don't think in looking at that schedule, there's a doubt that these guys are going at least to hammer that, you know, destroy the Vegas odds. But you know, Eric, this is a team. I can see a path for this team to go undefeated.
I know.
This is a team that could really throw a wrench in the works for an Ohio State or an Oregon, who everybody expects to be colliding in the Big Ten championship game.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that could prevent the defending national champions, even if they have an okay season, from getting in the playoff.
Yes. In fact, I asked Larry that very question. If a 9-3 Michigan and a 10-2 Rutgers are sitting there at the end of the season, who does the committee take?
Now, there's a lot of variables. I'll tell you, there's an argument for Michigan on the strength of schedule. However,
they would be better losses then.
If
what the argument
would
be.
Well, here'd be the thing, though. If you get a Rutgers team that runs the table in the regular season, for instance, goes 11-1, only losing in the or they have no losses until the Big Ten title game.
They're in.
That's a team that's a lock to get in. I don't care what anybody says. Because if your only loss is against, and again, I'm going to assume it's going to be Ohio State or Oregon. I think the winner or the loser of that game could be the one that's on the outside looking in come Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Rutgers is a team that if they put it together, they can cause a lot of chaos in the Big Ten and really in the playoff picture.
Yeah, I agree.
Dig that, by the way, Eric. I dig that. I'm excited about that.
Now, what if I told you that 9-3 Michigan might be taking over 10-2 Rutgers because Ward Manuel is the head of the CFP committee?
He has no reason to even be having a job right now.
I agree with you on that one.
And more of this story comes out, Eric.
It's bad.
I mean, I don't know if you saw it, but they've actually officially stated now something that we all knew.
Yeah.
You know, with the they hacked Ohio State's computers.
Yep. So, again, it's interesting that here we are doing a Rutgers preview. And when you break it all down, Rutgers has put themselves in a situation where they are, in all honesty, in the same breath being mentioned with Michigan as a possible college football playoff team in 2024. Now, attached to that is the idea that they have to take that next step as a program and as a team. And I think that, like I said, I think they've done what they, you know, what they've been, what we, they've done enough changes in this season. But here's the thing. Greg Schiano's been building this for a while since he's got there. Greg Schiano was in our top, I think he was number 6.
Yeah, I believe so.
In our Big Ten coaching rankings. Whether he gets this college football playoff or not, one thing's for sure, this is not the same Rutgers.
No.
That was a auto dub on everybody's schedule. And I think more than anything, I cannot wait for them to go to Los Angeles, California, to the Coliseum on a Friday night and beat the Trojans by 2 scores. Like, that will be a welcome to the Big Ten, boys, type of moment. That would be absolutely hilarious. Piscataway, New Jersey takes down L.A. in the Trojans on a Friday night, man. That is going to be fantastic.
And, Eric, let me give you a frightening thought. Imagine this Rutgers team in that same situation versus Ohio State last year.
Yeah. They had us on the ropes, dude.
And again,
now the score doesn't. The score does not indicate it.
No, but they had us on the ropes, and this is a team that now has a quarterback that has a vertical passing game.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a frightening thought last year, and you know what? If they go through and they run the table this year, or have, even if they go 10-2, as you and I predicted, this is going to be a team and a program that's going to have a lot of confidence as they enter next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Now they're going to lose a lot. That's the
primarily Kyle Manungai.
Yeah, well, he is.
That's
he
a huge
is,
loss.
Yeah, he is, that would be a giant loss for anybody. And then like I was going to mention, there is a nightmare scenario for Ohio State. We've talked about it. We did a podcast about it. I wrote an article about it. The nightmare scenario for Ohio State is you lose to Eugene. You lose to Oregon and Eugene. You then run the table, including beating Michigan. You go 11-1 on the season. And Rutgers goes 12-0 and gets to play Oregon in Indianapolis. And you're left out watching.
You know what? That would be a nightmare situation, but at the same time, that might be just good enough to land that number 5 seed that everybody, I think, kind of covets at the same time.
Yeah, true. So it wouldn't be all bad news, I guess. It's a good way to put it, Chris. Like, share, subscribe. We really do appreciate all of your support as we've worked our way through these. We have 3 more left, Chris. We have Nebraska, Northwestern, and the Ohio State University. We are down to the stretch. We've
down
hit
to the
home
last
stretch.
3, Eric, and I'm telling you, it's been a long preseason, but man, it's only going to get more crazy as the season goes on, because we think we're recording a lot now, man. Just wait.
That's right. Like, share, subscribe, ring the bell, get notified so you don't miss any of those recordings that Chris is talking about, including all the great live stuff that we're going to be doing. So make sure you're clocked in and checked in here at the OHL Podcast as we work our way through the 2024 season. Chris, till next time, OH.
Hi-o.
Go Bucks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.